Welcome. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. You're listening to Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. Today's show is actually one that was suggested to me by a childhood friend. I was going to say old friend, but then I thought that's not really very polite. I have known Luann since we were in elementary school, and she suggested the topic for today. So thank you for your suggestion, and I hope this is helpful. I think it's a very interesting trio that we're going to talk about, and that's the grouping of compulsive shopping, hoarding, and kleptomania. Now, you may be sitting there wondering, how in the world can these things be related to, first of all, addiction, because obviously this is a show about addiction, and then secondly, how are they interrelated, or are they, do they have any relevance to each other at all? And the answer is yes and yes. There are certain characteristics about each one of these disorders that can be very closely linked with addiction. In fact, there are some researchers that feel that each one of these may be a form of an addiction. The other way in which they're interrelated is that it is quite common to see people with one or more of these addictions, or excuse me, one or more of these behaviors along with their disease of addiction. It's also common to see individuals who have both or all three of these disorders together without the disease of addiction. So we're going to talk a little bit about these and try and help you understand, and to help me understand, when have we crossed the line with normal shopping and sometimes impulse shopping and impulse buying, and when might we have a disorder? When is having a few extra books around, and I'm directing this to my husband, just a normal kind of behavior, and when is it hoarding? And when have we gone beyond the idea of taking something like borrowing some papers and pens from work to a disorder called kleptomania? So we'll look at all three of these. But first, let's start off with a shopping addiction test. So the answers to these questions could be almost always, once in a while, infrequently, or not at all. So the first question is, do you buy things even if you know at the moment you don't have the money to pay for it? Almost always, once in a while, infrequently, or not at all. Number two, is it difficult for you to save money? Number three, when you have extra cash that you have saved, do you save it? Or instead, do you think of other things and buy other things? Number four, do you cheer yourself up or give yourself a reward by going shopping? Number five, does more than a third of your income go to pay credit card bills, which don't, of course, include rent or mortgage? A third of your income. Number six, have you had to move credit lines because you typically don't have the money to pay off your credit line? Number seven, do you pay the minimum balance on your credit card most of the time? Number eight, are you inclined to keep buying more of your favorite foods, like favorite things like food, clothing, makeup, CDs, books, computer software, electronic gadgets, etc., even though you don't have a specific need for them? And number nine, when and if you have to say no to yourself or control yourself from buying something you really want, do you feel intensely deprived, upset, or angry? If you've answered always or once in a while to at least four of these questions, you may have a tendency to overshop. So think about those specific questions as we go along and see if you are one of those people who have some difficulty around holiday time where you might buy things on impulse or spend more than you had intended to spend. Or are you one of those individuals that struggles a bit more even not at holidays, not at special occasions, but just in your everyday life with buying or spending more than you have. Omniomania is the technical term for compulsive shopping, or what we also call shopping addiction. And though you might think that this is a new disorder, it's really not. It's actually been described since the early 19th century and was finally characterized as a psychiatric disorder in the early 20th century. Now, everybody shops, or most of us have to shop, at least sometimes in our lives. And some of us are certainly guilty on an occasion or two of impulse buying, buying something that we really don't need, or succumb to a nice sales pitch from a friendly sales clerk. Some of us may spend more for something than we intended or buy more things than we had thought we would. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the 6% of the U.S. population that is actually thought to have a shopping addiction. Usually this begins in late teens and early adulthood. And it's often a co-occurring disorder with mood or anxiety disorders, very commonly with substance use disorders, eating disorders, other impulse impulse control disorders, and personality disorders. So there's some disagreement among professionals as to how to actually characterize or classify this disorder. Some people see it as part of an obsessive compulsive problem where there is a obsessive thought followed by a compulsive behavior that is important to try and reduce anxiety. Whether it is part of an impulse disorder where individuals who have problems with their prefrontal cortex or their frontal lobes have a thought and then have an action. They don't think things through. They don't weigh and balance consequences. They just see something, they want it, they buy it. And this is different than someone who has the disease of addiction. Addiction is, at least in the beginning, as we've talked many times, really a desire to heighten pleasure or to get pleasure from something. The anxiety and shame occurs afterwards. With the OCD, the anxiety is first, and then the behavior is to reduce the anxiety. So I think that there are certainly multiple ways that you could look at compulsive shopping, and I think that for some people, the actual etiology really varies. So when we talk about compulsive shopping, it's important to really look at what's the motivation and what are the feeling states that someone is trying to either avoid or achieve. And this can help us not only with proper diagnosis, but also maybe more importantly, help us with proper treatment. So we understand that with all of these disorders, and we'll talk about them separately, but with all of these disorders, those questions can certainly be asked. What is the motivation and what are the feeling states? But with shopping addiction, people become preoccupied with spending, and they devote a huge amount of time either to planning the activity, actually engaging in the activity, or trying to cover up the activity. I'm not sure if any of you have really been around someone who is addicted to shopping, but what you see is really highly ritualized behavior. There's a certain process that the person goes through as they shop. Sometimes they're shopping very specifically for items, specific items. Some individuals are really compelled to try and find the best deal. So it's not so much what they're buying. It's, well, I can get this for 50% off. Never mind that I don't really need 14 pairs of flip-flops. They're such a good deal. So sometimes that's the ritual in finding the best deal, the best price. And other times people are really searching for a way to change how they're feeling right now. They're depressed, they're sad, they're anxious, they're feeling put upon, or they're angry. I've worked with a number of folks who are compulsive shoppers that shop at people. They've had a fight with their husband or their wife, and so because they didn't get their way or they felt misunderstood or not heard, they go out and buy something that's very expensive, potentially not needed, and they know that this is really going to make their spouse angry. This is sometimes the only way to get an emotional response, negative though it may be, from their loved one. So it's not always I feel sad and I want to feel better. Sometimes I'm mad and I want to get even. And so they shop at people, so to speak. Often the purchases are not even used. They're hoarded. And that's where we get into the hoarding behavior. Sometimes folks go to great lengths to hide their purchases and to hide their behaviors. And one of the interesting things, and David, we had talked about this before before the show, and that's with online and television, the shopping networks purchases. I'm certainly very familiar with a number of folks that have had addictions to shopping online and also to shopping through the home shopping network. They will plan their day and their schedule around certain TV shows. They like the host, they like the product line, they follow and read very carefully who's going to be showing their jewelry line and at what time and when can they tune in. It's very interesting to see how this happens and to watch these, again, the highly ritualized behavior happen around home shopping programs. Interesting behavior. One individual that I'm familiar with was having merchandise that he had bought over the home shopping network delivered to work so that his spouse would not know that it had happened, would have these big boxes brought into the office where he worked, and then would have almost an equal number of big boxes to give to the UPS man to take out that day. He would order the items. They would come. He would unwrap them. He would look at them. Sometimes, if they were clothing, try them on, display them in his office, move them around a little bit, repack them, and send them back. It was a very interesting way in which this ritualized behavior of shopping, examining, and then sending back. But thousands and thousands of dollars went through his checking account every month as he was making purchases and then waiting for refunds. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about compulsive shopping and other behavioral addictions. We'll be right back.
This is David Donaldson with the Atlanta Healing Center, conveniently located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. At AHC, your success is our goal. Addiction recovery is about more than just not using. It's about becoming a whole person and addressing all aspects of your physical, psychological, and social needs. Please call us at 770-696-9862, or you can reach us on the web at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Cheryl Linker, host of the Master Gardener Hour on America's Web Radio, Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. Join us as we keep things fun and interesting as we educate you in the world of master gardening.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank, and today we're talking about compulsive shopping, hoarding, and kleptomania. Yes, all three of these are linked behaviors, and they have a direct relationship with the disease of addiction. In fact, as we spoke about earlier, some scientists and researchers feel that these are each in and of themselves an addiction. So let's continue a little bit with the compulsive shopping. And what's interesting is that we're not talking about an occasional impulse buy. We're talking about people who develop massive credit card debt and the difficulty that develops in their relationships is significant. Many of them have problems with depression and anxiety, and the huge mood swings that can happen for these folks as they go through the process of anticipating the buying, the actual buying, and then the remorse and regret that can happen afterwards. It's really, really devastating to the person who's struggling with this, but also to their loved ones. The arguments, the fights that go on regarding why do you keep buying things? We can't afford this. You don't need that. Why do you want this? Why are you doing this? Can create such strife and problems in relationships. The financial debt that some of folks get into is really astounding. It is not uncommon to see people coming into treatment for shopping addiction with their average debt load is about $70,000 to $100,000 in credit card debt that they've managed to accumulate. It's not uncommon to see people in danger of losing their homes, having cashed out their retirement, having spent their children's college money that has been saved. We're not talking about a couple of hundred dollars that they can't afford. We're talking about thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars that they can't afford. And depending on what study you read, it's anywhere from 2 to 12% of the population. Most of the folks who have this disorder will clearly say that they realize they're having financial trouble. They have a much harder time saying it's related to their unhealthy spending problems. Interestingly, this particular problem affects equal numbers of men and women. We see the compulsive shopping in both men and women at almost the same rate. When they, there's an interesting study that was done in Xavier University in Ohio with 406 college students. They were asked about how their about their attitudes toward having credit cards, around having debt, money, materialism, how does one fit on the social status based on how much money they make, and consumption as actually a way to gain success. What they found was that those individuals out of this group that actually met the criteria for compulsive buyers were often individuals who had very low self-esteem, and that they were also much more likely to be driven by materialism, to see that happiness and success is actually defined in terms of the things you have, the home you live in, the car you drive, and that they were much more likely to be externally motivated, as opposed to individuals who strive to be successful, who strive in relationships because they want to inside, as opposed to looking for compliments and success and affirmations from outside. People who are more externally motivated are certainly more at risk for being a compulsive buyer. And this low self-esteem plays a big role and is one of the things that has to be looked at in terms of a treatment, because just as we say with addiction, the problem isn't the substance. The problem is the brain, or the problem is the way in which somebody responds. In these cases, it may be that the problem is how the person feels about themselves. One of the difficulties and one of the struggles is that there's often a lot more support and encouragement for somebody to stay in their disease of compulsive shopping than there is with addiction. There's all sorts of difficulties when someone is active in their disease and they appear impaired and they get arrested and they have difficulty meeting their obligations in life. People who are shoppers are often applauded. It's funny, President Bush used to say, don't go out and drink and take drugs, but go out and shop, because consumerism fuels our economy. So we hear over and over again that other than individuals who are immediately affected by the shopping behavior, most of the time their people are complimented, that's a lovely dress, that's a really nice whatever, and they don't get looked on in a negative way the way we see with folks who have addiction. So thinking about that, it's really, really important to be aware that we are seeing a very, although on the outside the person looks pretty put together, very well organized, it really is a significant problem. So what to look for? Are you spending over your budget? Are you buying things compulsively? Are you buying more than you need? And is this a continuous problem, not just at a moment of stress, not just at the holiday season, but is it something that's happening all the time? And it's a vicious cycle, because what happens is the person has bad feelings about themselves or their situation. They go out and shop. They feel better for a little while, and then the shame and the guilt comes in, and often it really destroys the relationships. Just like infidelity can destroy a relationship, this kind of behavior can certainly destroy a relationship, and sometimes, excuse me, for the very same reason, which is that people are not being honest. The real erosive part of infidelity or of compulsive shopping comes with all of the stories and the lies and the half-truths that go around hiding the behavior. So if someone is taking out extra credit cards that their spouse or their loved one is not aware of, and they're spending up bills and they're borrowing from Peter to pay Paul so that they can keep their spending under wraps, that they're buying things and hiding them, that they're telling stories. No, this is old. I've had this for years. the story comes out about purchases that are discovered. So the impairment to the relationship is really dealing with the deception and the preoccupation that people have with covering up their behavior. And there will eventually be clear consequences, unless you're a gazillionaire and have more money than you need, because the debts do catch up, the creditors do find you, and it is really very, very difficult. So what can you do about this? This is a really important thing to think about, and that's that you've got to recognize you have a problem and get professional help. There is a group called Debtors Anonymous, which is a 12-step program that provides support for recovery for individuals that are suffering from compulsive spending. There are some medications that have been used, sometimes antidepressants, and certainly if depression is part of the picture, they can be helpful. But for the most part, medication has had very mixed to poor results. Cognitive behavioral therapy is one of the things that can be really, really helpful. So identifying your shopping triggers is important. Just like we talk about triggers for people who have the disease of addiction, there are also triggers that individuals experience before they have the urge to shop. Do you shop out of boredom, out of guilt, out of shame, or anger? Sometimes keeping a journal, either electronic or handwritten, that talks not just about the behavior and the consequences, but what's the feeling state that you were having before you made the decision to go shop. That's where the money is. That's where, no pun intended, that's where the value is in terms of looking at how to get yourself out of this compulsive behavior. Try and figure out what needs shopping is filling, and trying to find more healthy ways in which you can fill those needs. Change your environment. There may be some places that are not going to be safe for you. Go on your TV and if you have cable, delete the shopping channels so that you don't see them. Close out your accounts. Cut up your credit cards. Do whatever you need to do to make sure that you're not in a situation to be able to do the impulsive buyers. And again, get some support. So now let's look at hoarding. There have been a number of television shows dedicated to the idea of hoarding as a very fascinating and interesting disorder. But is this really an addiction or a compulsive behavior? And I think that, again, we go back to the idea of what's motivating it. Is it in an attempt to relieve anxiety? Is it in an attempt to make you feel better? Now, when they've looked at the brain in terms of compulsive shopping, they found that shopping releases dopamine in the same areas of the pleasure areas of the brain, just like the diseases of addiction. However, when they look at what happens with the person who hoards, they have a disorder in another part of their brain. They have a disorder in the gear-shifting part of their brain called the anterior cingulate gyrus. This is a communication between our rational thinking part of our brain and the deep emotional unconscious memory of our brain. And people who have hoarding behavior seem to have their gear shift stuck in neutral. They can't go forward, they can't go back. And they find themselves unable to get out of the emotional attachment to things and move forward into the more reasonable, logical understanding of what these things represent. When we look at things like hoarding of animals, the distortions that some of these individuals display in terms of understanding that they've got way too many animals for them to be able to take care of, and that, in fact, the animals may be sick, underfed, harming each other. They don't see that behavior, and this gear shift is stuck between their emotional attachment to the animals and their inability to actually acknowledge that this is causing harm. When we'll be back in a moment, and we'll talk a little bit more about hoarding as a potential addiction. Thanks for listening.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Hi, I'm Paisley McDonald, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my show, At Home with Paisley, every week, Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, for practical advice and stylish living for your home and office.
Hi, this is Kate Copsey, inviting you to listen year-round to America's Homegrown Veggie Show, every Saturday at 10 a.m.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. You're listening to Detailing Addiction, and today we're talking about compulsive shopping, hoarding, and kleptomania, their relationships to each other, their relationships to addiction, and the question of whether or not they can actually be an addiction. Now, hoarding is a little bit more difficult to classify as an addiction and certainly much more likely to be an anxiety disorder. The differences in the areas of the brain that light up when someone is in hoarding behavior or talking about hoarding is this gear shifter, the part of our brain that allows us to focus and have good attention on things that we're taking care of in everyday life. But the gear shifter needs to be able to shift down and recognize, for example, when we're in danger. When we're in danger, we don't want to continue to work on our checkbook when the tiger is running into the room. We want our attention immediately shifted to our survival part of our brain, the part of our brain that keeps us alive. And this anterior cingulate is the part of the brain that allows us to move quickly back and forth between attending to basic needs like I'm hungry, I've got to go to the bathroom, I need to take a nap, or I need to sit here and finish studying this article in preparation for my radio show tomorrow. So our anterior cingulate allows us to shift back and forth, and people who have hoarding behaviors have trouble with that shifting mechanism. People with addiction also have that same problem. For a little bit different reason, the drugs actually cause the front part of their brain, their thinking, reasonable, logical part of their brain, to shut off. And so they are reacting strictly from survival mode and strictly from emotion, and they're not paying attention to reason, logic, and good judgment. So hoarding may be a little more difficult to see of as an addiction, although the treatment and individuals being motivated for treatment is very, very similar. We see poor motivation for change in hoarding behavior. We see difficulty with good outcomes. We see people frequently who start treatment but then quickly drop out of treatment. And those are the same kinds of things that we see with folks who have the disease of addiction. They may be motivated for a time, but often don't really want the treatment, are there because other people have insisted, and at the first opportunity, they drop out of treatment and do something different. So what is hoarding? Hoarding is the excessive acquisition of, or the inability or unwillingness to discard, large quantities of objects that cover most of the living areas of the home and cause significant distress and impairment. Hoarding creates health risks and sanitary conditions, impaired functioning, it's an economic burden, and it has a very adverse effect on family members and friends. In fact, if you've seen any of the hoarding shows on TV, you'll know that sometimes the actual living space can be so limited that people cannot even do simple daily things like get to their bathroom to take a bath because there's stuff in the shower, in the tub, piled up so that they can't bathe, that there's so much stuff in the kitchen that they can't get to the oven or the stove. And if they were to try and attempt to cook in that situation, it would actually be a fire hazard. The DSM-5 has put compulsive hoarding in a separate category. It's not listed like it used to be as a component of obsessive compulsive disorder. It's not listed as a disorder of impulse control, and it's not listed as an addiction, but it has characteristics of all of those. It's estimated that about 5% of the population has this condition, that it usually starts in childhood, and that the symptoms worsen the older you get. And that at times it can be so difficult that family members have to move out, or family members become old and sick themselves and die, and then the clutter and the compulsive hoarding takes over the entire, and I mean entire, home. Sometimes we'll see people who have hoarding behaviors have a strong history of alcoholism, and that their isolation in their life that comes from hoarding also fits very nicely with being isolated on their own and drinking. Sometimes they have personality traits such as paranoia, schizophrenia, or avoidant. But it's a very difficult disorder to treat, and actually the success rate is pretty low. Now, what are some of the things that people hoard? They hoard junk mail. They hoard cooking equipment, old catalogs and newspapers, things that they think might be useful for crafts. I know my husband's rolling his eyes right now. Clothes that might be worn one day, and I think that everybody has something from high school in their closet, I'm sure. Broken things or trash, freebies, promotional products that have been handed out or given to them. Sometimes the home becomes so cluttered that beds can't literally be slept in, that tables can't be used for dining, that there's such an sanitary places. There are cases of where people have actually saved diapers, dirty diapers, for years. People will hoard and save their fingernail clippings, the hair that they have had cut, all kinds of things that I'm not even going to go mention, because some of you may be actually thinking of eating in a little while. But what they collect and what they hoard can vary from person to person. But certainly the overarching reality is that their homes become very, very dangerous and unsanitary. Certainly cases have been written of people who have been crushed by items falling over that have been stacked to the ceiling in their home and crushed and killed people, and that people haven't been found for days to months to weeks because they're so isolated. They refuse to let family members come in. They refuse to let people visit, and so sometimes they can't find them. The hoarding of pets really is so dangerous and so sad, because they have so many animals in their house that there's no possible way that animals can be properly cared for. Often you find that dead pets have been cannibalized by other pets that have been found under the heaps of garbage and junk, and that the animals are often, unfortunately, severely malnourished and ill when someone finally does help and finds out. The clutter is so bad that usually the hoarder does not allow visitors. They keep their shades down so no one can see the mess inside. They get into tons of arguments with family members, and there are actually risks of fires, falls, infestations, or evictions. And most of the time, they feel extremely anxious and overwhelmed themselves by all of the clutter. often we see that the age of onset is quite young, and that many of these children starting at under the age of 10, most people report, 70% report onset of symptoms by the time they're age 20. And fewer than 4% of the people have onset after the age of 40. And when that happens, there may be some other metabolic reasons that this has happened. But often these kids have lived in homes where they themselves have been neglected or abused, and they have very significant trauma histories that makes it very difficult for them to give up these things that they have collected and hoarding. We see that most of these folks have some very interesting patterns on evaluation with a PET scan, looking at how their brain functions. They often have symptoms that are like people with obsessive compulsive disorder, but they also have difficulty with making good decisions, and this getting stuck is one of the things that happens. We have different subtypes, but one that is interesting and I'll mention, and that's called bibliomania. That's a disorder in which they're collecting or hoarding books to the point that social relations or health can be damaged. Being one who loves books, I don't quite understand what the problem is with this one, but apparently there is a lot of difficulty. The American Society of for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals has developed in many large areas or areas of large population a hoarding prevention team that helps hoarders maintain a healthy number of pets. And again, the delusional kind of out of touch with reality that you see with hoarders, in that they don't see that there's a problem. They don't understand why others are upset. They understand that people are upset with them, but they don't understand that. And they can't believe that what they are doing is causing problems to themselves or to anybody else, and they don't see that they're causing problems to the animals that they are hoarding. They don't respond very well to medications. Cognitive behavioral therapy can help, and sometimes the best you can do is a term that we use sometimes in addiction treatment, which is harm reduction. Not that we're going to get you to stop hoarding, but that we're going to try and decrease the implications of the behavior. So teams coming in to clean up and straighten, not necessarily to make you stop hoarding, but find ways to do it in a safer way. So harm reduction seems to have been one of the best treatments for people who have hoarding and hoarding disorders. Most of them do leave treatment early, and most of them have a very poor response to treatment. When we come back, we're going to talk about our third and final potential addictive behavior, and that's the disorder of kleptomania. Please stay tuned.
This is David Donaldson with the Atlanta Healing Center, conveniently located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. At AHC, your success is our goal. Addiction recovery is about more than just not using. It's about becoming a whole person and addressing all aspects of your physical, psychological, and social needs. Please call us at 770-696-9862, or you can reach us on the web at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss the show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Healthcare Consumerism Radio. Learn, connect, share. Join us every Friday at 11 o'clock to learn all those confusing issues around healthcare, Obamacare, Medicare, Medicaid. We'll help you find the answers, help you stay in compliance. Join us Friday at 11 o'clock.
This is Michael Gannot with Insight to Israel. Every day, the Israeli Defense Force finds itself on the front line of the war with the militant arm of Islam. Surrounded by enemies from within and without, they fight for the only Jewish state. Military service is mandatory, ladies serving 2 years and men serving 3 right out of high school. While young people in other democracies are busy traveling or attending university, Israeli men and women gear up for basic training. In a world of heads of state, politicians, ambassadors, diplomats, and a leftist media, many times our voice at the grassroots level is drowned out. So we started an ongoing project called Hershey's for Heroes. Patriot conservatives from all over the U.S. are sending Hershey's chocolate bars with a note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF? For information, please see my Facebook page at Michael Ganot. Thank you, God bless Patriot conservatives, and God bless Israel in her struggle for sovereignty and security.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options, such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle, medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction. And today we're talking about compulsive shopping, hoarding, and kleptomania. All of these disorders have been seen individually. We certainly see compulsive shoppers who also hoard. We've seen hoarders who are alcoholics. We've seen kleptomaniacs who are hoarders and kleptomaniacs who are also compulsive shoppers. And there are actually some folks who suffer from all three of these disorders. There is some debate about whether or not these disorders actually could be an addiction. Usually one of three different categories of disorders pop up when you talk about them. The first would be a disorder of impulse control, where someone has usually a neurological problem that results in their inability to delay gratification or their inability to stop a behavior. The classic form of this is one called Prader-Willi syndrome. This is a genetically inherited disorder that you see. These young people unfortunately don't live too long, but they are compulsive eaters. And they will eat not only every bit of food in sight, but they will eat the plaster off the wall. They'll eat, chew on their, and try and chew up their pencils. They will eat anything and everything compulsively. Families who have children suffering with this disorder have to lock up, put away everything. These kids are not hungry necessarily, but they have this compulsion to eat. So these disorders of impulse control often have a neurological basis, and individuals have a very difficult time trying to resist that impulse. Obsessive compulsive disorder is a very specific type of anxiety disorder where someone has an obsessive thought or a fear, and then they develop a behavior to compensate or try and undo that. And then, of course, addiction is seeking after a pleasurable experience, at least at first, and having no feedback loop to tell them that they should be done now or they've had enough. So where does kleptomania fit in all of this? It is a psychiatric disorder where the person begins to feel pressure and stress. And the way to relieve this pressure or stress or anxiety is to steal something. When they steal something, there is a relief of this anxiety, and the person feels better at least for a little bit of time. Interestingly, the first person that I ever treated with kleptomania was actually someone who was originally admitted for the diagnosis of alcoholism. And in talking with this person, it became very clear that there was not the typical description of, I feel anxious, so I need to steal something so I'll relieve the anxiety, but that for this individual, they felt an increasing sense of excitement as they went to a store, and that they're taking something and getting away with it gave them a real big rush, very much like someone who had had taken a drug. After I worked with this individual, I began to ask more and more of my patients about these kinds of behaviors, and surprisingly, a large number of them talked about the first time when I asked them, when was the first time you got a rush or first time you got high? Often they'll say things like, when I was at school and I stole the milk money, and I got away with it and nobody knew. I got this real sense of excitement. I got really high. Other people will say it was the first time I told a lie and got away with it. But there are certainly behaviors that many folks with addiction can acknowledge that have to do with these feelings of excitement and getting high. So this comorbid relationship between addiction and kleptomania is very close. And when we go through what are the feelings before, what are the feelings during, and what are the feelings after the behavior, with any of these behaviors, we begin to see the pattern of whether this is an impulse disorder, whether this is an obsessive compulsive anxiety disorder, or whether this is an addiction. So, interestingly, for many people, the urge to steal starts out very young, and just like with the disease of addiction, people find themselves having to take something bigger in a more dangerous situation with more risks involved in order to get the same high. Going in and stealing a pack of gum might do it for them when they were a kid, but as an adult, they need to go in and steal a diamond necklace. They may need to go in and steal something of greater value. Often they're stealing something that they don't need. Very often with many of my patients, they'll say, I have money in my purse. I could definitely pay for this, or I've got money or credit cards in my wallet. I can afford this. This isn't the compulsive shopping side of it where they're buying things they can't afford. They're stealing things that they can often very much afford. But there's also following that a sense of shame and guilt, and there's certainly a potential for serious legal consequences. Many of these folks will find themselves arrested for shoplifting, embezzling, and other kinds of stealing behaviors. The typical kleptomaniac is a 35-year-old woman who began to steal before she was age 20. They feel like, researchers, that there are about 1.2 million Americans suffer with a full-fledged kleptomania, and that kleptomania accounts for about 5% of all shoplifting. Based on the total shoplifting costs of about $10 million per year, 5% translates in, $10 billion, I hope I said billion, 5% translates into $50 million lost annually to kleptomania. We see that people have a powerful urge to steal items that aren't needed. They are unable to resist this compulsion to steal. The release of pressure that occurs after they steal, and the sense of stress and remorse. And sometimes this can be very much overwhelming. Interestingly enough, we see that sometimes we're also dealing with people who are stealing from their employers, and this can create a tremendous amount of financial loss to the business. Certainly, there are people who steal things because they need them. They are stealing things to pay for their drug habit. There are many motivations towards stealing, but for folks with kleptomania, they are usually taking things in a way that is not so much focused on money, but focused on the thrill or the relief of the anxiety, if this is an anxiety disorder. Now, there's certainly reason to have some cautious optimism around all of these disorders. The problems of stealing or kleptomania, the problems of compulsive spending and hoarding, because as we have more effective ways of neuroimaging, of seeing which parts of the brain are actually active during these behavioral disorders, we're able to understand and find more effective ways of treating the symptoms and helping the person live a much more normal life. Understanding that there may be other co-occurring disorders such as an addiction or anxiety or depression in all of these patients can also help us understand that other therapies and medications may be helpful. So while this show today is certainly maybe revealing information to you that you may not be aware of, the hope is that it's also highlighting the idea that these people have a disorder. The chances for a recovery, at least for most of them, is pretty good, and that there are developing treatments constantly being looked at. So it's to highlight that, yes, these are unusual disorders. They may be more frequent than we understand, but it's also very possible for them to get help. 12-step recovery programs can be very helpful. Medications to some degree. Cognitive behavioral therapies have shown great promise, and neurofeedback, brain training that can help reduce the symptoms of anxiety, reduce cravings, and enhance a person's ability to control their impulses are very, very helpful. This disorder of the gear shift that we've talked about, where the person has difficulty going back and forth between reason, logic, and understanding, and emotion and survival urge. One of the ways in which we can actually help this is by talking therapy. The actual process of talking about how you're feeling or talking about what you're doing can help to move that gear shift and bring it up out of emotion, feeling, and anxiety, and bring it into the realm of cognitive understanding, problem solving, and helping a person be able to develop a good sense of self-esteem, reduced anxiety, and improved ability to contain impulses. So if you know someone who suffers from these disorders, please, please ask them to get help. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction, and we'll see you next week on America's Web Radio. Thanks so much for listening.